The murder of two men forces their families to wrestle with impossible questions. Who is forgiveness for? Does everyone deserve a second chance? Follow season two of The Letter, Ripple Effect, at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are it. And Brooke, you are it.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
Oh, excuse me. Sorry. Just hydrating. Just hyper-hydrating for tomorrow. I'm sorry about that. Are we still doing the show?
Oh,
I'm just hydrating.
You got some electrolytes in that tea this morning?
There's water with a little bit of
water with a cucumber.
A little cucumber in there.
Oh,
to
that's
make it taste
smart.
Better.
No, that's really
fancy.
Good.
Fancy.
Yeah.
Well, our water here doesn't taste great, I got to tell you. So I throw a little cucumber in there. And
I drink it every day. It's fine.
Did you see
the picture I sent the group chat of stretching?
Yeah, just doing a little stretching this morning, making sure the hamstrings are loose, ready to go for tomorrow.
I'm sorry to everyone for how obnoxious this is. It'll be over tomorrow.
No, I'm just doing a little hyperhydrating. You know, that's how it goes. Maura, you wouldn't know anything about it. It's fine. I'm trying to gear myself up, make myself ready.
You're right. I wouldn't know anything about you. Your routine for this.
No, my routine is unique. It is my own. And when it leads to, let's call it a
demolition.
Yeah. Yeah. An outright dominating performance tomorrow, then maybe you can come and I'll be able to
teach
you a few things.
This is just killing me. It's just killing me because I know what you ran. You didn't obviously share that with anybody else.
Right.
And I've not shared it with anyone else either. And Maura was just like, well, now I kind of know what my time is. And
right.
I so badly want to know her time.
Right. Because you want
so
to like
have some kind of sense.
Thing.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. But I'm not going to do it. I don't want to do it. So I want to go in kind of pure to this whole deal.
Yeah,
just
I
pure
think that's
competition.
Better, right. Don't you want to like have like a pure under like.
I do.
Who knows what will happen.
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, Maura and I are racing 200 meters tomorrow, soon after the show at the University of Washington at the nice track in the rain. And we'll see how it goes. The rain to me is the wild card.
Right.
I know that I could beat Maura, no problem. The rain is a bit of a wild card. I don't know how everyone will handle it. I don't know how the track will be. Will it be slippery? Will we be able to get traction? So if there are any sprinters out there who want to give us some advice on running in the rain and what that's like, please let us know. That's why I'm working out the hamstrings. Just want them to be in shape. Brock, nice to see the Mariners yesterday use the formula.
Oof.
Once again, it's the formula. When JP gets on base and Julio hits and you get starting pitching, you tend to win.
What is that, Dre?
It's the formula.
There you go. It's just the formula, Brock. There it is.
It's pretty good. This pitching is, you know, I couldn't wait to watch this matchup yesterday. So, you know, and not just because it's defending world champs, not just because you didn't beat them one time in their building last year, but they're kind of the standard, and they do it differently than you do. They hit 1 through 9 and have hit over the last couple of years pretty darn well. You pitch 1 through 5, and then you pitch 6 through 14 in your bullpen. Like, you pitch, and let's see pitching and versus hitting. And we see it in the playoffs, and we see it in the World Series, and we know what wins. Pitching and defense wins. And man, it showed up yesterday, because I've got to include defense there, Saul.
You have to.
It was freaking nails yesterday.
And
Rojas made as good a play as we've seen any third baseman here in Seattle make.
Gilbert Deals swinging a hard hit, one skipper taken there by Rojas and knocks him down. He picks himself up, fires on a hop to first base, and it's in time. Josh Rojas just took a hit over at third, popped up like a heavyweight champ, and threw a seed to first base to get out number one.
There were a couple great shots yesterday. I mean, great shots. Kudos to Root and the TV guys. You know, Julio rubbing the trident up against him, you know, just loving on that trident. About time the trident fell in love with me the way that I love the trident. You could just read it, right? Rojas's face after he made that play, and just his body language after that. And he kind of looked at everybody, and he looked next to him at JP, and then he kind of looked at the dugout, and he didn't want to be sheepish. He didn't want to act like that was just an amazing play. I just loved it. There was like a childlike nature to like, yeah, I can do this. That's 108 miles an hour for Mr. Garcia, and I can snag it, and I can throw from the ground, and I can throw a seed on a one hop, and I can do this thing. And man, I hope that just fuels further confidence that he can play that hot corner to that level, because it was, as I said, man, it was awesome.
Well, you kind of got each of the pieces, right? You get Logan Gilbert just dominating again yesterday. He didn't have his good stuff. That was not Logan at his best at all. I mean, the command was off. I think he walked more batters yesterday than he had all year long. But he has his fourth start of the year where he goes 6 2/3, allowing one earned run or fewer. Mm-hmm. That's insane. Yeah, in fact, as Justin sent me over this earlier, that's more than all but two teams in the league. Logan himself. Philadelphia has 5 starts of 6 2/3 and one earned run or fewer. Kansas City, oddly, has 5. 7 teams have 0. 7 teams have 1. Logan has 4. Think about that.
Unreal.
7 teams don't have a single start as good as what Logan did yesterday when he didn't have his best stuff and had to kind of figure it out with the cutter, which is something that he hadn't used as much. Like, yeah, all right, I'll just have to bring out my new pitch to try to, you know, find something I can throw over the plate, and he does it. So when you get your formula, when you get Julio hitting his first home run, when you get JP getting on base, when you get starting pitching like that, and then you can add like one other piece to it. Last night, maybe it was the Rojas defense and he gets on base for a run as well.
Cal.
Maybe it's Cal hitting himself a gigantic bomb in the early part of that game. Whatever it is, if you can get that one other piece to add to the formula, you're going to win a lot more games than you're going to lose, and that's what they did yesterday, even against a very good Texas team.
Salk, you saw that graphic. I retweeted it yesterday. I think it was in the second inning. Once Cal hit his home run and once Logan got that run support, do you see the graphic that the Mariners put up on the old television? Logan Gilbert, in his first 92 career starts, when he receives 3-plus runs of support, he's gotten that in 47 of his 92, so almost half. Just about half of his starts he's gotten in throw-in yesterday. So 48 of 93, he gets 3-plus runs of support. You know what his record is? 31-0.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, 17 no decisions in there as well, but 31-0. When that horse and that thoroughbred gets a lead, and now he can deal with all of the pitches, and as Passan told us on Monday, that cutter that you mentioned, you know, just statistically, next level baseball savant, is pretty stinking filthy. And you give him, or you give Luis the other night run support, or you give George run support, you give those guys, Bryce today, some run support, and you let them really cut it loose, and they don't have to be fine.
That's a pretty good building to hit in, right? I mean, like, unsurprisingly, you bust out with a couple of home runs and actually hit the ball for the most part.
That felt like that could have been a 9-0
Probably
game.
Could have been.
I mean, they got two doubles. That was it. They got two hits, the Rangers the whole game. You had traction galore, bases loaded, first and like you had opportunities.
Sort of that one big hit to kind of blow it open, but they're giving themselves those shots. I mean, you got to hit home runs, and they hit two of them yesterday and ends up being the difference in the game. So nice job by the Mariners. They're in first place. As bizarre as that kind of would have felt 10 days ago, the Mariners are now in first place, half a game ahead of Texas, with an opportunity to win one of the next two and win this series. A lot of text messages coming in. Salk says the 509, I like you and I love the show, but I hope Mora destroys you. That doesn't sound very nice. Salk is already at a disadvantage in the race. In the rain, his high human hair thread count will absorb the water like a sponge.
Yes.
He's going to instantly poof into a Mike-sized chia pet.
Ew.
That doesn't sound good. That will make it hard to run, there's no doubt.
866-979-3776. 866-979-3776.
Yep,
just very simple. Mike or Mora. Just text it in. 866-979-3776. Yeah. Who are you rooting for? Not who's going to win. Not who's going to win. Who are you rooting for?
Oh, come on.
Who are you rooting for?
You know
rooting
that's going to be 100-0.
I don't think it will.
No one's rooting for me.
I don't know.
No one is. Everyone is against me. No one is rooting for me. Everyone is against me. But yet somehow,
No one does.
Okay,
read
Richard.
The text machine.
Okay, sure.
Nobody ever believed in us.
Oh,
me.
Okay.
Nobody ever believes in me. Knock it off with the excuses, Salk. Only losers talk like that. Mora will win by a finger length. Tip for Salk: running in the rain don't suck. I'd say that's unnecessary. That's not very helpful. That's just not helpful at all. You got this, Michael. Oh, thank you. That's very nice. That maybe came from the Graz. He's the only person that calls me Michael. recycle that and my mom. All right. Coming up
I would like to read off all the responses next. We got a Mike.
Let's see. Let's go, Mike. I love a God underdog story.
Mora
by 30, salad fingers, sulky. Mora's going to win.
I just really wish Brock wouldn't call human beings thoroughbreds.
I'm taking Mora by a finger length. Nobody cares. Salk should have to go back to Boston if he loses. Rooting for Mora.
Okay. All right.
Mora. No, it's a Let's Go, Mike. Sorry, I'm trying to make this sound like an old bit that somebody used to do on the radio here where you just read people's names for a while. People call up and they're just like, Mora, Salk. Mora, Salk. But you got to do that in March, so I guess we've missed our window. We'll come right back with everything you need to know. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Real estate transactions can feel intimidating, but at Tycor Title, we make it feel more like a visit to your favorite coffee shop. Seamless, satisfying, and efficient every time. Trust Tycor Title with your next real estate transaction. Go to mytycor.com.
Sign up for Mariner's Mail to receive pre-sale offers, exclusive content, and more directly to your inbox for free. Mariner's Mail subscribers get first dibs on all the latest ticket news and action from T-Mobile Park. Go to mariners.com/insider to join the club today.
Spring is here, and now is a great time to visit the incredible new showroom at Toyota of Kirkland. Right now, Toyota of Kirkland has over 400 new Toyotas in stock and on the way, including Camrys, RAV4s, Tacomas, Highlanders, 4Runners, and Tundras. Test drive one today and drive it home immediately. Let the team at Toyota of Kirkland take the hassle out of the car buying experience. Toyota of Kirkland will exceed your expectations in every way. Visit them today or shop online at toyotaofkirkland.com.
Massive. The Power of Pop Culture is Seattle's Museum of Pop Culture's newest exhibition, featuring iconic artifacts from artists Beyoncé, Nirvana, and more. Planning a trip to Washington? Make sure to include MoPop in your itinerary. Tickets and info at mopop.org.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Pretty simple recipe. JP, Julio, a little bit of starting pitching. That'll work, and then it'll taste even sweeter when somebody like Cal Raleigh gets involved, which is what he did yesterday. He hits a home run, and then Julio, it was finally time, Brock.
Has not homered yet, 1-0. Swinging a high fly ball out to left field. Number one is sailing away. How far? Midway up the second deck. Julio's first in 2024 is loud. A two-run bomb, truly. And it's 4-0 Mariners.
Think you got all of that one?
Did I see that was the hardest hit exit velo home run by the Mariners this season?
It was the hardest hit ball, I think, by the Mariners this season, and certainly the longest home run. He was it was like he unleashed a full month's worth of frustration into that one poor little baseball, which went flying out of the ballpark. So they win 4-0. Logan Gilbert kind of did the rest. He was phenomenal last night, as we said. 6 2/3, doesn't allow a run, really didn't have his best stuff, but he's got another pitch now, which he can use to get himself out of jams or evenings like last night.
Yeah, it helps out a lot. I don't think we used it in spring training much against him. So it was kind of there today when we needed it. We went to it a lot, and I think it helped out, kind of gave it a different look, something moving into them to lefties. A lot of my stuff's north-south, so you know, I felt like it was working. We just kept going to it.
He's talking about the cutter there, which he kind of developed this offseason. You throw in some pretty good work from Stanek, Spire, and Munoz, Brock, and you've got 3 games out of 4 now where you haven't allowed a run in the first 9 innings of the game. They've allowed in their last 7 games, you know how many runs total? 6. They've allowed 6 runs in 7 games. And now they've taken over first place because they've won 6 of 7, 8 of 11. So if you want to go back about 10, 11 days, you could say, boy, it's a good thing Scott Surface didn't panic.
So you said a couple different times he didn't have his best stuff. Was that him saying that, Scott saying that, or is that just your eye saying that?
Well, all three.
Okay, because I think he kind of pitched around some of those guys. Like, I'm not going to let a few of these guys really, really hurt me. And then when I need to, I'm going to just show that whole mix in my repertoire. Now, yeah, you're right. It wasn't 97.
I guess maybe what I should say is he didn't have his best command.
There you go.
Last night.
There you go. I think that that's
the stuff was good. It was a command issue.
You know what? I appreciate you clarifying that.
Sure. I'm happy to
help.
And
that is the standard with which we now hold these guys. If you walk somebody or you walk two people, your command is
a little just off. I don't know what's wrong with this
and
guy.
And I loved, and Justin, did I see you like it last night as well? Did I see you like Taylor Saucedo's tweet on Spire?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hemi Neutron?
Yeah. Hemi Neutron.
I like that.
That was really good. Spire has been nails. Mm-hmm. Taylor said you can call him Hemi Neutron, and I think we should start doing that as well.
Maybe we will, if I understood what that was. What does that mean?
Well, you're not a hipster like me and
what
my
does that
bro,
mean?
Justin.
Yeah.
He's just him.
I feel like that Brock thinks being a hipster
means
he's
him.
Cool.
He's him. And in this case, he's Hemi Neutron.
It's a play on the him thing you're getting in there.
I still don't
he
get
is
it.
Him.
I get the him part. What's the Neutron part?
Jimmy Neutron.
Jimmy Neutron?
I don't know what that is.
Oh.
What's Jimmy Neutron?
Cartoon character.
Oh, that sounds dumb.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
The draft, of course, is now a day away, Brock. Finally, tomorrow. And the options for the Seahawks are plentiful. Maybe they go offensive line with Valtano. Maybe they go with Michael Penix. Maybe they go defense versus Latu Murphy, depending on who's available for them. Maybe they trade down. But those are probably your most common options, I guess, that you're looking at as of today. Mark Dominic certainly wouldn't rule them out of the quarterback race.
I think they're still, you guys are big time sleepers at the quarterback spot. I think they're the sleeper team that's just being quiet and maybe make a move. I know that's not usually what John does, but I think he's one of those ones that, you know, makes a move and puts himself in position to go get the quarterback. So I think, you know, when you see these quarterbacks fall, what could they do with it? I think that's the one thing I would sit there and look at.
I don't know, man. I put that hay in the barn a month and a half ago when Sam Howell and that trade was made, because I think at that time, and you were on the same page with me, Salk, that a lot of the work was done. You're reading the room, you're reading the tea leaves, you're reading where teams are going to go, the direction the Minnesota is going to go, the direction these teams are going to go, and you're just not and don't have the artillery to move up in the draft. I think what Dominic is saying is if something were to happen at 16 and one of these guys tends to or happens to fall at number 16, could you be a sleeper team to take the swing then? Maybe. But I'll stick by what I said, man. Get big people. Get the line of scrimmage figured out. Build this team from the inside out.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Throw some kudos to Caitlin Clark. She will continue to work with Nike. She signs a $28 million contract that will span the next 8 years. Includes a signature shoe. Her initial NIL deal signed in 2022 expired at the end of this season. So, amazing story. It sets her up with humongous wealth, and as she 100% deserves. And no, she's not going to make as much money as she probably should in the WNBA. And I think some of the success and some of the eyeballs that she will bring to that league will help for the next generation of stars in that league to make a lot more than they're making right now. But this is great. I'm curious to see what other products she endorses and what sort of power and success her brand could have. $28 million to me feels like just a start if she's able to do what she did in college.
Yeah, if she does what she does in college, it will be just a start. If she does what she does in college, it will change the revenue stream. I know a lot of people have talked about this for the WNBA, but that revenue stream is based on ratings. It's based on revenue. It's based on advertising. It's based on numbers. It's based on how many millions of people watch. And if millions of people watch, guess what? Millions of dollars come in, and the WNBA will make way, way more money, and their salaries are going to go way, way, way up. But as it is right now, that's not necessarily been the case in the past. I sure hope it is moving forward. And when those numbers came out yesterday, the Diana Taurasis and all the other old heads in the WNBA are even, I think, that much more fueled to make sure they go right at her and just tear into her and dig into her. And if she survives, Salk, and she comes out the other side and she is awesome, that league is going to flourish.
All right, there you go. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here in the Brock and Salk Show. What is Jimmy Neutron? I'm more of a Johnny Chimpo guy. I like that Afghanistan animation. So what is Jimmy Neutron? I've literally never heard that term in my life.
Jimmy Neutron, boy genius. This came out when I was in, I think, junior high or high school, and I didn't really watch it, but it was on Nickelodeon. It was...
I'm looking this up here. 2001. Huh. Yeah, it's weird that as a 23-year-old just out of college, I wasn't watching kids' shows. That is strange. Yeah. Really odd. I'm sorry, everybody. My bad. That's all my fault. I was, you know, going out and getting drunk. I'm sorry I wasn't watching Jimmy Neutron, Boy Genius. That's
no, that's on me. Asking you to, but Taylor Saucedo is a lot younger than you, so you're acting like his reference is so
like,
weird.
Wow, why would he ever make a reference like this? When he's
I'm not saying he's weird. I'm saying the people who were like, Welcome Salk doesn't know anything about things that everybody else knows. Like, well, that's why, because 23-year-olds aren't paying attention to dumb cartoons.
And you didn't have kids at that point.
Because I'm an adult.
You wouldn't have been seeing it.
Exactly. All right. Coming up, Brock, a disturbing trend that might not tell the whole draft story for the Seahawks. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Cantor Diamond is the only professional office for diamonds and diamond jewelry. Meet us in our professional Tacoma offices by appointment or globally by phone, email, Instagram at K-A-N-T-O-R Diamond. Truly the best diamond prices, bestdiamondprice.com.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
The Museum of Pop Culture, Seattle's destination museum for music, film, fashion, and gaming, has savings just for Washington residents in May. See MoPop's newest exhibition, Massive, The Power of Pop Culture. Tickets at mopop.org/maycation.
Spring is here, and now is a great time to visit the incredible new showroom at Toyota of Kirkland. Right now, Toyota of Kirkland has over 400 new Toyotas in stock and on the way, including Camrys, RAV4s, Tacomas, Highlanders, 4Runners, and Tundras. Test drive one today and drive it home immediately. Let the team at Toyota of Kirkland take the hassle out of the car buying experience. Toyota of Kirkland will exceed your expectations in every way. Visit them today or shop online at toyotaofkirkland.com.
Real estate transactions can feel intimidating, but at Tycor Title, we make it feel more like a visit to your favorite coffee shop. Seamless, satisfying, and efficient every time. Trust Tycor Title with your next real estate transaction. Go to mytycor.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
So this guy, Jason Fitzgerald, he's from Over the Cap, posted some numbers on the draft, and their way of essentially measuring, Brock, how successful a team was at drafting was based on the percentage of second contracts awarded to players they had drafted. Now, we can debate whether or not that's a fair way of looking at it. I think that there are some issues with that style of, you know, with that
methodology.
Metric. Yes.
That methodology, Salk.
But okay, here's what he came up with, and 2019 would be the last year of this because those are the groups that are just starting to get second contracts. Now, from teams drafting between 2011 and 19, in terms of second contracts versus first contract APY, here's what he came up with. The Ravens were the best, followed by the Texans, Bills, Rams, and Chiefs. Those were your best drafting teams. Ravens, Texans, Bills, Rams, and Chiefs. Mm. Four of those five teams have been among the best teams every year. Right? The teams that were the worst team in the league at drafting, John Clayton would should be here to hear that it was indeed the Browns.
He would like that.
Followed just barely by the Seahawks, who were behind the Jets, Raiders, and Bucks. Those are the worst drafting teams from 2011 to 2019.
So does that include the guys that you signed, like all those guys that you signed to second contracts? Does that include Bobby and KJ and Richard and Cam? Do they have to leave and go elsewhere and they got second contracts elsewhere? Because that's hard for me to fathom when you look at that group that they drafted in those years and the huge money. Now, also remember the way that the Seahawks kind of navigated that.
I think this includes guys who left and guys that stayed. It's both, right? And maybe I kind of missed that at the beginning. I thought it was like the percentage of your own guys that you ended up keeping.
Right.
But I think, as you're saying, I think I was reading it wrong. I think that's right. It's the second contract versus first contract average per year.
Right.
So that's why you're looking at saying, so in their second contract, the guys the Ravens had averaged 5.2x more salary. Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas the Seahawks averaged just 1.5x. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe some of that is that you got your own guys on some pretty good deals.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of it.
Sure it is.
You know, I mean, this is one of those never let the facts get in the way of a good story, because those are the numbers. But you do have to factor in the way they do business and the way they did all their extensions is, you know, that average per year. They didn't wait on guys to get it all done. They would do it a year early. They would roll it in. That average helped their cap.
Right.
I mean, with all of those guys. I'm not making an excuse for
it. No, this isn't an excuse. It's just trying to – this is just one metric. No one is saying this is a be-all, end-all metric. Yep. You just put it out yesterday. Moore sent it over to me, and I thought it was interesting. Anytime you're going to be the worst at anything or second worst to the Browns, it's something that's at least worth examining. Maybe they're not as bad as this necessarily looks like, but, you know, that's not a great number. Okay.
And some of it, I mean, in full clarity, too, there are some lean years. I mean, 10, 11, 12, 13, pretty stinking awesome. You get to some of those other years that wrap into those.
13 was not awesome, by the way.
Okay, 10, 11, 12. So you get to 13 through some of those years, and it gets a little bit leaner.
It gets pretty lean.
Obviously, you change a little your draft philosophy. You've got a locker room full of dogs. You're going to take a little bit more risk. You've got a roster that's pretty – all of those things, there were also real variables – and why you won year after year after year after year and being one of the winningest teams in that
stretch. I think there's something to be said for you got your core during that time, and then that ate up a lot of your, you know, space. And so you were sort of drafting it, you know, not always at the high point of each round, and you were looking for some very specific things. Yep. But you throw in Malik McDowell's and some of the other issues that they had during that time. Yes. And yeah, it eventually does tell sort of a story. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what that says necessarily about their past. It's not a great sign, but maybe it's not as bad a sign as it comes across when you see your name right there with the Browns and Jets, right? And Raiders, teams that have really struggled during that space. But it also makes me think, okay, so this leaves off in 2019. That doesn't really give us a read on your current situation. Looking at the Seahawks team now, and this is helpful leading into the draft, which players currently on first contracts would you say today, yes, I absolutely want to see them re-signed here in Seattle? I got three. Absolute yeses. As of today, Cross, and there's still room for improvement, but I would say that Charles Cross, as of today, is probably somebody you would like to see re-signed. Witherspoon, based on one season, yes. Jackson Smith and Jigba, based on one season, yes. I don't have any other clear yeses. I got some maybe prove it over the next season or so. I think Mafe and Abe Lucas, just because of the knee issues. Ken Walker, running backs, we'll see. Tariq Woolen, one great year, one lousy year. Bradford, maybe there's a little hope in there. I mean, there's some guys in there where you're saying, all right, yeah, you could certainly show it and prove it and, you know, make a point that you're going to get a second contract here. But do you have more than three, four guys that you think right now are, those are people you want to re-sign?
Yeah, and that's why this is a huge year, man. This is, and I keep coming back to this when we talk about the roster construction and the roster build and moving this thing forward, and why I think from the very top with ownership, they made the change that they did is, you know, these guys need to take a step. Like, if you're going to do what you did in 10, 11, 12, 13 and build a world championship contending team in a difficult division head-to-head with McVay and Shanahan, like, your young people have to do what they did the first time around, right? It's got to be – you mentioned that word incubator of scheme, and you loved that the other day with the coaches and everything. Well, this has got to be an incubator of growth for those guys that you just mentioned right there to take the next step.
Yeah.
Because that's what they did. That's what Bobby did. That's what Sherm did. That's what KJ did. That's what Cam did. That's what Russell did. Bobby did. They all got second contracts, right? And even the Michael Bennett's and Cliff Averill's that came here as free agents on 1 year bet on themselves, you know, just exploded onto the scene. So that's the step that Kim Walker needs to take, Salk. So he needs to show, no. I'm one
show
of those
the value.
Dudes. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the step that Tariq Woolen needs to take. Like, no. I'm an elite corner. I played that way my first year. I slumped significantly my next year. Devin Witherspoon, you know, Jackson, on and on. That these draft classes that Charles Cross that we've liked, now we got to love. And they've got to do that on the field by taking that next step.
Yeah, I got some text coming in about the metric here. And there is some fun stuff to discuss. Salk, are some of those numbers skewed by quarterbacks? Yes. But he also clarified that, and Moore sent that over also. The Seahawks are still second worst to a different team, but you would still be second lowest even if you were to take the quarterbacks out of the mix, because some of them skew it with such gigantic numbers, right? If that's out, then your bottom five would be Arizona, Seattle, Cleveland, the Raiders, and the Jaguars. So it's not that different when you take the quarterbacks out. The other one I saw is, well, is it because the Seahawks have been drafting later in each round? Maybe. But again, remember, this is looking at how much money relative to how much they got out of college. So for a fourth round pick, right, if you hit on a fourth round pick and he gets great, then he gets a gigantic new salary, completely different from the very small salary that
Chiefs
he made coming out of college.
Been drafting late too.
Right. So some of the, that's also true. So some of this is about, you know, finding value in the draft and bringing in players that either you or the rest of the league believe after one, you know, after their rookie deal, that they're significantly more valuable than they were when they were drafted. So, yeah, maybe you got a first round pick and he signed somewhere else for, you know, a moderate amount of money. That's fine. But that's not the same as getting a fifth rounder that you really hit on that all of a sudden goes for big, big money after that.
And that's where they were just so just.
Of course, they were unicorns. Yes, they were Chancellors.
Yes,
the Russell KJ Wright. KJ Wright. I mean, that list keeps going and going and going.
Yes. Yeah, it was off the charts. And, you know, boy, howdy did some of this research. You know, I'm looking, Saul, because in Blue 88, I'll tell you, you know, one of the things I think that McDonald and the Baltimore philosophy brings over and why, you know, they hit it the way they have hit. You know, you look at this in 13, no first rounder, 14, no first rounder, 15, no first rounder, 17, no first round. Like, you know, you just don't have some of that top tier talent and you traded down and you wanted a little bit more volume. And we remember some of those classes. You know, there was 3 third rounders 1 year and just none of them really took that step. None of them, you know, got great value in their next contract or even to the Seahawks. They were just guys and they didn't really pop. And that also is a part of, you know, this new scheme and these new set of eyes and this new organizational philosophy that comes from a Mike McDonald and a really young and a really hungry staff to maximize the talent that maybe hasn't been done so in some of the past years.
So let me give another potential take on this, because I don't know what all of this means, right? We don't know exactly why that these numbers are sort of fun to fit, you know, pick through and try to determine what it is. But all right, let's try to look at a pro John Schneider view on why the numbers have not been that good here over the course of that time. Well, we heard yesterday from Mark Dominic that one of John's real strengths is listening.
Yep.
Right? That he's a listener, that he's a really good listener and can then try to get what it is the coach wants.
Direct them and talk to them about, like, what does each position look like? Tell me why. Why is Kyle Hamilton a good pick for you guys? What, you know, I know he was taller, he didn't run as fast, but what was it about Kyle that you liked about his game? But take me through your offense, take me through your defense. And now the hard thing you have to do is you have to sit there and say, hey, look, you're going to build this. Let's go defense because it's Coach McDonald. You're going to build this defense from scratch and you've got 11 players. All right. And I'm going to give you a nickel corner because I think nickel corners are that important. So you got 11 players. So it's going to take probably one linebacker off the field, or maybe I'll give you 12 players. You can have the nickel corner. Let's do it that way. And so now I want you to rank, what's the number, if you could pick one player on the entire defense that you had to have, what positions he played?
Right. He kind of goes on from there. Yeah. And you can see more that everybody likes ranking, even GMs like Mark Dominic. He just loves a good ranking. And there's probably some honorable mentions that they put in there as well, because that's just what a smart coach would do. Maybe Pete had players and types of players that the rest of the league didn't value. Pete wanted a type of player that fit what he wanted, and that was not something that the league was going to value necessarily with a big-time next contract. That's certainly part of this, and that could be, you know, a possibility, and that should
that's
give
not
you some
even,
hope
hold
for
on
the
a second.
Future.
That's not even a hypothesis or a thought. That's fact. You know, there was a lot of years there where there's a lot of corners that aren't on the board.
Mm-hmm.
The personnel guys, scouts could love. I love this guy. Sorry, he doesn't fit this length and this arm. And that's a standard that Pete's just like, sorry, you know, I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it. This is a standard that I have. And ultimately, I think as they struggled drafting some of those guys that, you know, looked like Richard Sherman and were long, but they couldn't move and they didn't twitch and they didn't fit in today's, you know, system of speed and some of the air raid. Like, yeah, I think Pete did adjust. but it took some time. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely know for a fact that there's a bunch of times these scouts and personnel directors and the guys upstairs want certain guys played and developed in some of the scheme. And I think Ken Norton was one that loved veterans more than young players. And I think that's ultimately why they made a change with Ken Norton, a D coordinator too. Like, it just was hard to get some of those older guys out of their ways and innovate and incubate mm-hmm. and grow and develop.
Yeah, so
and that's not a shot whatsoever on Pete at all.
No, it's just the way things changed, et cetera. So there's a lot of ways to look at this, and I'm not choosing to look at it one way or another. I think there's, you know, there is an issue there. You were not doing over the course of that time enough in the mid rounds, especially to exceed expectation. At the same time, we don't know the reasons why, and this is our first chance now to see what a draft looks like, as again, with John 100% in control, working with a new coach, with a new, updated, more modern scheme and system, and trying to figure out what that will look like on draft day and beyond. It's also a reminder that guys like Mafe and Lucas and Walker and Woolen and Bradford and some of these guys who are on the bubble right now really need to play better and really need to kind of put themselves in the 2-3x category as opposed to the 1-1.5x, which is kind of where they're at right now.
Yeah,
so
we need some himmies. I mean, that's just what we need.
Need some himmies.
We need some himmies.
Did you know what that was? Did you know what that was?
Hemi neutron? Dude?
Yes.
Of course I did.
You did not.
Dude,
you absolute liar.
Bro.
Liar.
A hundo.
Wrong.
A hundo.
Don't hundo me. You didn't have a clue what it means. You still don't even really know what it means. And you're just trying to play it like you off.
Taylor
like you
is
do.
A Spanaway guy, Sacido. Yeah. I'm a Puyallup guy. We're okay. Pierce County boys. Uh-huh. We see things very, very similar.
That must be it.
And I knew with you. Exactly, man. I'm like, of course, Hemi Neutron.
Yeah, of course.
I'm with you.
I'm sure that's just what you thought.
This is Brock and Sox Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huer breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huer and Mike Saul.
Oh, it must be time for some Blue 88. Brock, three good football questions for you. Let's start here. You've been looking for a Michael Penix comp since forever. You've not really come up with any. Do you finally have a Michael Penix comp?
He was right below our noses the entire time. Right below our nose the entire time, Saul. Michael Penix, let me give you just the data and the numbers
okay.
here. Okay. Just flat out size, flat height, out weight, everything. Michael Penix at the combine was 6'2", 216 pounds, 33 5/8 inch arms, so 6'2", 215. He didn't run at the combine. He ran at the UW. If he did run at the combine, he'd have been a 4'5 guy. He jumped, what, 36, 37 inches. So this is just pure physical comp. Our buddy Geno Smith, short shorts, Geno.
Had a feeling this is where this was
going. At the combine was 6'2", 217 pounds, ran 4.59, jumped 34. Now had about an inch smaller hands, a little bit more, so 9.25. So physically, I'm honest to God, physically, they look very similar. Physically, when you look at Geno Smith's body, you're like, I don't know. I think he's kind of high cut. He's kind of lean, especially with his short shorts. Like, can this dude sustain? Well, he's sustained. Mm-hmm. Coming out of West Virginia, remember him? He sat in the green room. Part of the reason that there are only 15 dudes, they don't want that anymore with the NFL. Not a great look. They're not all about Hollywood drama, man. They want to cast the widest net, everybody to feel good, everybody positive. But Geno had to sit and watch. He didn't go in that first round. There were questions about kind of production and, you know, projection and everything else. Geno throws a beautiful spiral. You won't find anybody, right? We've gone through that over the years. Ryan Fitzpatrick, all those guys talking about Geno back in the day. This dude could throw. They both have long frame, may not have huge hands, but the way they grip the football as well, I promise you, Ryan Grubb, and he's this important to him, mm-hmm. is how you grip a football. You know, just like all these pitches and how they grip these pitches. Geno's way up on the top of that football. Part of the reason he rips it, and he throws clean spirals. Very, very rarely does he throw a duck. And oh, by the way, great touch on his deep ball. Like, there is a lot of Michael Penix in Geno Smith, physically, especially running, jumping, height, weight. His body's been able to endure, I think, in a very positive way. And hopefully Michael Penix can do the same.
Interesting. All right, question number two.
You thought that's where I was going?
Once you started saying under our nose, that gave me a pretty good clue. Yes. Speaking of the guy right under our nose, Geno Smith, Mark Dominic with us yesterday, was impressed, but not that impressed with Geno.
I think the best way I can explain it is when I was in Tampa, we drafted a young quarterback named Josh Freeman, who was supremely talented, you know, on the field, and kind of fell a little bit off the field. That's kind of hurt his career. But even though I had a young quarterback who had great numbers his second year, like fabulous NFL numbers, I still had to beat Drew Brees, Cam Newton, and Matt Ryan, right? And so it's like, I realized that I still have probably the fourth best quarterback in our division, and that's really brutal. And so when you look at where Seattle is, it doesn't mean anything against Geno. It's just the fact that, hey, look, we might have the fourth best quarterback in this division, and we've got to swing at it. And, you know, you might not be picking 16 next year.
Is Geno really the fourth best quarterback in the division? No,
I'm not buying it, man. Okay. That list, I ain't buying it. Kyler Murray? No, thank you.
Right.
I mean, leadership-wise, body language-wise, size-wise, production-wise, flashes of brilliance, but no consistency. Kyler Murray or Geno? And oh, by the way, Kyler Murray at $50 million, Geno at half that? Not even close. Brock Purdy is a winner. Brock Purdy is a tough sucker. Brock Purdy does some great things. Brock Purdy is limited. A lot of things he can't do, and that system covers a lot of it. And if Brock Purdy were playing behind some of the struggles up front and in this system, no way. So Matthew Stafford, yes, definitely. But Matthew Stafford, again, at $50 million and at his age and everything else versus Geno, I'm sorry, man. I'm not buying that list. I'm not buying that list at all. Matthew Stafford, I will put ahead of him. And certainly in this year and just in this year in a vacuum in 2024, sure. Mm-hmm. But from a skill set standpoint, a talent standpoint, contract standpoint, I think you got the second best situation with Geno Smith. Certainly not dead last.
All right. Question number three. Well, we're talking about the Ravens, right? Five times in salary on their second contract.
Yep.
Well, look, that's where Mike McDonald comes from. That's probably not an accident that he's here. What can he learn from that to help John Schneider
You know what they've done? They've drafted in the first round. And you know when they draft, it is a very, very clear, there's kind of two very clear things they want.
Okay.
Big school, big production. I want big school. You've played in big environments. And then kind of the old Bill Parcells. I want 3 years of production. I don't want one-hit wonders. Zay Flowers, Boston College, big production, bigger school, ACC, so not the biggest. The year before, Kyle Hamilton, Notre Dame.
I don't know if you can use BC as a big school. I'm sorry. That one's not going to work for
that's
me. That can't be your first metric.
It's not the MAC. It's not the Sun Belt. It's not Conference USA. I mean, it is still Power 5 school.
BC, just barely.
Thank you. Kyle Hamilton, Notre Dame, Tyler Lindebaum, Iowa, Rashad Bateman, Minnesota, OA, Penn State, Patrick Queen, LSU, Hollywood Brown, Oklahoma, Hayden Hurst, South Carolina, Lamar Jackson, Louisville, Marlon Humphrey, Alabama, Ronnie Stanley, Notre Dame. I mean, all of those guys, big production, all of those guys, second contracts, all those guys been pretty good producers. We'll see about the receiver Bateman. He's been up and down. You have to go back to 15, Salt, for somebody to not really hit. And you know what he was? UCF, American Conference at that time. Rashad Perriman, a receiver, big talented guy, but not a big school. They believe in big-time production from big-time schools, and that's been a big-time imprint on their success there in Baltimore.
Good stuff. All right, that is today's Blue 88. I think people have to go to your games in order to be considered a big-time school. So
that's fair.
I wouldn't know if I could put BC.
You know what's amazing, too, is I remember my first time up there. What is it, Chestnut Hill? That just sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
And then you go to the stadium, it's like...
The stadium's not beautiful. Chestnut Hill's gorgeous.
It is.
Yeah.
But the stadium's definitely not.
Like, well, because nobody's... I think I've told you this before. I literally never been to a BC football game in my life.
I
grew up 5 minutes from there, maybe 10.
I totally understand that. Yeah. Is Geno Smith not the second best quarterback in this division? Really?
Yeah, it's very true.
Am I wrong there? Am I Seahawk
biased
there?
No, I think I could be convinced to agree with you. I mean, the Purdy thing is tough. When you're including everything, Brock, Purdy, for what you're paying him,
yes,
is better. That's a better situation.
And his numbers have been extraordinary. And
right.
His toughness and all of it, awesome.
Do I think Geno Smith in a vacuum is a better quarterback than Purdy? Yeah, probably. But if you're going to include salary and everything on Stafford, then you got to include it on Purdy. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I would say the Niners quarterback situation is better than the Seahawks. I would put the Seahawks second or third, but I actually would put the Niners first. I would then put either the Seahawks or the Rams next because you're right. Stafford in a vacuum, probably better than Geno, but Stafford at his age, money, et cetera. There's a reason the Rams are another team that a lot of folks think are going to take a quarterback this year. Maybe it's Bo Nix. Maybe it's Michael Penix. Maybe it's Spencer Rattler. We'll see. And I think that by far the worst is Arizona because I just don't think he's very good.
He's just not, to me, been a leader of men. He's just not elevated people around
you. He's not accurate. I mean, there's all kinds of problems.
Yep, and that's going to be the next, paying him a lot of money. That's going to be the next step for Geno, right? I think if you just kind of listen behind the scenes, everything, come on, man, take that next step, right? Just elevate those people around you that much more. Here is a new system. It should fit you really, really well. Right. If Sam Howell liked this system because it's a college like system, when Geno was at West Virginia throwing for 6,000 yards, let's go. Let's go. Let me get into space. Let me play with some rhythm. Let me get some of these matchups. Let's really focus, you know, our attention on maximizing the individual skill sets of the people around me. And he, if he continues to elevate people, that contract's going to look
Neutron. If
he will be Hemi Neutron, apparently. Hey, is that the voice of Justin Barnes I hear? I'm glad it is because Justin sent over an idea last night for a new baseball stat that somebody should be keeping. And if they were, the Mariners would be dominating it over the course of the last seven games. Tell you what it is and why it matters next on Brock and Salk.